This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And Raj, as you know, as we see this, these zephyrs coming down over the lake, it's been propelling that lake effect snow down into northwestern Indiana and southwest Michigan and over the relatively warm waters there. And
well, thank you, Tom. Really appreciate the detailed information about the isobars coming across Lake Michigan there.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, you young whippersnapper. Are you staying warm?
Yes, I am, but it seems like every year at this time, right when the big farm machinery show takes place in Louisville, it becomes winter.
Yeah.
You know, we've had maybe some nice temperatures ahead of it, and then wham.
Yeah, exactly.
And, there was a little bit of snow in the Louisville area this week down there when I was at that show, and you know, they don't handle it too well there.
Yeah, I know. My sister lives in Atlanta, and they even had a little snowfall.
Yeah, there was snow around Raleigh yesterday. Yeah. They were closing businesses and all of that stuff down in North Carolina. So yeah, it's winter. It's winter in the Midwest, but we're going to warm up again in a few days.
Golf weather on Friday.
That's right.
I'm always thinking of golf. What can I say?
I can tell you are.
Yeah.
Well, stand by. We'll check in with you in a few minutes and let us know if there's any late news developing. We'll
you
come
got
back
it.
To you.
Okay.
Roger Badish at the WGN Newsroom. Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday morning show this morning, live and direct and in living color here, as Orion is off but not totally off, because he'll be checking in with Samuelson Says in just a few minutes. Yeah, we were kicking tires and looking at all the new stuff this week indoors at the National Farm Machinery Show. This is the last day of it. It's a four-day show. And a big part of it every year is the tractor pulls. They hold those at night. And then you've got all of these exhibits. It's all under one roof, but you can do, it's an amazing amount of walking in that show. You need to have comfortable shoes, as I was reminded this week. But what a thrill it was to get to see a lot of old friends. I had farmers visiting with me from California to Maryland. Yeah, there was a guy there from California, and this is the same week for the Tulare Farm Show out there. But this guy said, no, he always comes to Louisville. And I said, well, what do you have on your farm? And he said he has almonds, he has wheat, he has wine grapes. So it was a pretty diverse operation. But I met farmers from California to Maryland and from Ontario to Mississippi, Louisiana. A lot of Ontario farmers at that Louisville Farm Show every year. It was always quite a crowd from Canada. But there was a new manager of the show this year. Steve Kelly is in charge. I talked with him about it. We stood there at the show, and I said, well, yeah, fill me in here. Talk with me a little bit about the excitement of running a show of this magnitude, the largest indoor farm show in the United States, held right there at what they call the Kentucky Exposition Center.
Well, it's very exciting. Of course, this is a new position for me, just coming in September down here, and mainly responsible for the North American Livestock Expo, the Farm Machinery Show, and the State Fair. So this is obviously the first time I've been in it from this side, but I've enjoyed the show for years. Like I say, we attended when we were in high school as FFA members. So, I mean, I've been around it for a long time, but in a new role now, so it's exciting.
I know there was some concern among the folks in animal agriculture about the commitment here to the North American International Livestock Exposition, but I would imagine you're here to say that it's firm and the show is here to stay.
It is definitely here to stay. You know, that show's bigger than a few people, and there was some changes and some shakeups, you know, based on some political decisions here by our former administration in the governor's office, but the show itself is here to stay. You know, there's so many people that makes that happen. It's not one or two people. There's so many volunteers that are part of that, and that shows, you know, it just continues to grow every year, and it'll be here whether I'm in this seat or the next guy's in this seat or gal, whoever takes this spot, but that show is here to stay, and it's going strong.
And the Farm Machinery Show itself, talk a bit about that. And how you would explain it to someone who's never been here, Steve?
Well, it would be hard to explain if you haven't seen it. I mean, you almost have to come and see it to see this much indoor exhibit space just filled from every corner with the equipment, the newest, the latest, the greatest state-of-the-art stuff. And, you know, we have a lot of people that attend this show, and this is where they unveil a lot of their new equipment. You know, I know there's been some of that already this morning with their unveilings of the newest and latest and greatest things. So, you know, it'd be hard to explain. I mean, it's one of those things you almost have to come and see, I mean, before you can experience it.
In this era of lower commodity prices, more challenging economics for the growers, has it been reflected in the exhibitors who come here, the space they take, or the equipment and the goods and services they bring?
Not at all. As far as this show goes, we have a very long waiting list of people who would love to get in this show. We could almost sell this space again if we had it here. A lot of your exhibitors would all love to have more space. I mean, that's a great problem for us to have, but it also presents some problems because you have people wanting in that can't get in right now. But no, we've not noticed it as far as, you know, exhibitors backing out on us or things like that. And we made a few changes this year. We've moved some of our family living center. Now we're calling it a gift and craft market. We basically had to move them around to utilize more space. We utilize some upstairs space that had not been part of the show before, just so we could get more, you know, larger exhibitors down on the floor. So, I mean, we're trying to use every square inch we can to get people in here, but I'm glad that people are patient. They wait, and when we have a spot open up, they're ready to move in. So that's a good problem to have.
This show's placement on the calendar, to me, it suits it very well. It's kind of a cabin fever release, I think, for some of these growers when they come.
You're exactly right. The time of year, you know, I know farmers are always busy, but this is probably one of their slower times of year, so it does allow them to get out. You know, we have folks that return every year that this is kind of their vacation. This is their getaway to come to this show and, you know, spend some time in Louisville, go to the tractor pulls at night and enjoy themselves. So it's perfectly placed on the calendar, in my opinion.
It's funny you should say that, because I ran into a couple this morning and she said it's the first time he's brought me away from the farm in years.
Right. You get a lot of that, and we get a lot of return people. You know, you meet people that's been here since this show started, and they come back every year to see what the changes are. And like I say, they use this as their getaway from the farm, and it's a time of year that's probably slower than others, so it works out well.
You still see FFA chapters coming here, young people coming to the show?
We sure do. You know, and we try to do some group sales on tractor pull tickets and things like that, especially catered to the FFA groups. We try to do some discount packages for them so it allows them to get up here. And, yes, I think over the next couple of days you'll see several blue and gold jackets here.
Steve, what's ahead for the future for this show? Are you doing any crystal ball gazing, planning on down the road, space allocations, things of that nature that, you know, in the big picture you are pondering for the North, the National Farm Machinery Show?
Well, as I said, of course, I just came here in September, so a lot of this is new to me. But, yeah, we're looking at every piece. This year, I think if you notice the shows, there's some new things here that we haven't done in the past as far as sponsorship goes, to give some of our exhibitors a little more, you know, presence. You know, we've done a video wall that allows them to do some advertising there. We're selling some banners that you may see hanging around. So we're trying to give our exhibitors more presence at the show, and they're willing to do that. We have some plans for the future. I mean, for the facility itself, the old Cardinal Stadium is in really bad shape and needs to come down. But, you know, we got a new administration in the governor's office, Governor Bevin, come out with his budget plan, and money is just so tight everywhere. So we do have a plan. We would like to get rid of the old stadium, maybe put up another building in its place that we could sell and potentially grow this show, but it's going to be a few years down the road.
Governments, the officials of government, as well as the men and women of business and industry in this community, certainly must recognize the economic contribution that this show makes, do they not?
Absolutely. I mean, it was calculated the last time they done the economic impact that it's a little over $16 million economic impact over these 4 days to the state and to the city of Louisville. So, yes, that does not go unnoticed. They realize that.
The geography attending this show is remarkable. I have found in the past, as people have come up to me and introduced themselves, what have you experienced? How far will they travel, Steve?
Well, as I said, this is kind of new in this position, but I've attended the show for years, and, I mean, you run into people from pretty much all 48 states and actually even some other countries. I mean, we have visitors that come from other countries to see this show. It's the largest indoor agriculture show, and even though it's cold outside, it's warm in here, so, I mean, it gives them a place that they can come and be comfortable and see all the equipment that's available.
Steve Kelly, a busy guy this week, overseeing the National Farm Machinery Show, America's largest indoor farm show, going on still today, the last day at the Kentucky Exposition Center. He's the executive director of Expositions, overseeing that event. And the farm equipment people, even in the midst of low commodity prices, a challenging farm economy, projections of farm income being down substantially, the farm equipment people were not depressed. That might be a little bit surprising. I moderated a panel with a number of those folks the other day. I'll share some comments from a couple of farm industry executives coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. The Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio, Max Armstrong here with you. I mentioned I moderated a panel this past week at the National Farm Machinery Show. It was a panel of industry experts gathered together by the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, headquartered up in Milwaukee, and they have an agriculture division, of course. And among those on the panel, Jim Walker, who was vice president for Case IH, the North American Agricultural Division. And it was interesting, as Jim visited with me, he said the dealers really are not so downbeat. He had just been with them, and so he had a fresh reaction from what they're seeing out of the countryside.
Yeah, we fortunately just had our annual dealer meeting last week in Nashville, Tennessee, and did a dealer advisory board meeting. And within those top dealers, we kind of did a poll and asked them what they saw going on in the different sectors of agriculture and their individual regions around the North America. And we were very pleasantly surprised that we believe that used equipment values are stabilizing. The volumes are being reduced, which gives the appetite of a dealer to trade, you know, for more product. And commodity prices stabilizing with Section 179, the producers think that, okay, now they can look a little bit further into the future and looking at product they might need. So I do think it has troughed, and I do think there's a lot of optimism out there.
You mentioned Section 179. With Congress taking that action, that does provide some certainty then for the grower, you're saying.
Yeah, a lot of high horsepower products like four-wheel drives, combines are pre-sold to customers. And so it helps our manufacturing footprint and you know, our scalability. And with Section 179, our producer can look at his crop as it gets up in the spring and into the summer, can look at commodity prices, forward booking, and then take into advantage now, knows he can depend on Section 179 as a tax effect, and can decide whether he wants to pre-order for the fourth quarter or not.
Is it troubling that commodity prices continue to stay so low, and we hear a lot of folks saying, well, we don't see much recovery in terms of grain prices in the months ahead? Does that kind of cast a pall over the industry yet?
No, I don't think so. I think that, there's a finite amount of acreage that's going to be put into cropland. And it's very clear, no matter what the commodity prices were or are going to be in the future, that a producer has to maximize their return and profitability per acre. So I think that what this does is it speeds up the look of how they're able to do that so they can be profitable at that level of commodity price. And I think we've had some tremendous advancements in yields, inputs and controls of chemical control and so forth at cost-effective levels. So I don't think the price is indicative as what's going on around the marketplace.
One thing you talked about here was the need to be active, certainly in the governmental affairs arena. It occurs to me that so many things that are important to your association, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, are also those key issues for the people to whom you sell, understandably, the farmers who are your customers. Do you see in the future even more cooperation between, let's say, the major farm organizations and your association because of those common needs and goals?
Well, I believe so. And I think that, AEM, or the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, certainly in a unified voice of all manufacturers, can be a loud voice. But I think that it's for the advocacy of our dealers and our producers. And I think when I look at what they can do, they themselves can contribute to that advocacy by contacting their local congressman or senator. And though we may be a small population in North America as far as agriculture, we can be a loud one.
The equipment he sells is red. That's Jim Walker, Vice President, Case IH, North American Agriculture Division. He is also the Ag Chair of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, the group for which I moderated that panel down in Louisville. There was another Ag Equipment Executive that I talked to after that panel. He sells tractors, too, but it's a little bit different perspective that he has. And I'll share that visit coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show. All righty, Rascal. Have a good weekend, sir.
You too, buddy.
Roger Badish in the WGN Newsroom. Max Armstrong back here with you on the Saturday Morning Show, along with Mr. Orion Samuelson. Samuelson says, sponsored by Wink Products.
The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics, and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 69 years, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. At the outset of this week's discussion on Samuelson Says, I must make full disclosure. That is, since they started the TV debates, Republican and Democrat, a year ago, I have not watched one. Debates teach me very little, maybe some of how candidates think on their feet and how they speak, but they spend most of their time bashing their opponents, people in their own party. And in debates that I've watched in previous elections, I didn't see anything that really gave me assurance or guidance that the candidate had programs in place to make America better. Even Donald Trump, who keeps saying he's going to make America better, hasn't yet told me how he is going to do it. So I do not watch the TV debates. But my question is, will agriculture get any mention in the election for president this time around? I did see a clip from the Iowa caucus debate where a couple of candidates talked about renewable energy, but I'm not quite sure they really knew what they were talking about and the importance of that to the economy of rural America. So I was fascinated by an article in the January issue of Farm Futures. They took a survey of money contributed to the candidates by farmers. Over $500,000 has been given to candidates during the current election cycle by farmers. And it's kind of interesting to see who places on that list. Number one, Ben Carson, $99,000, 219 supporters. Number two, Ted Cruz. Number three, getting money from farmers, Jeb Bush. Number four, Rand Paul. Number five, Hillary Clinton. Number six, Marco Rubio. And coming in at the very end, someone who didn't stay in the race very long, Bobby Jindal, got $300 from one contributor. Well, I'm not sure that money given to candidates is going to result in anything good for agriculture, but I would like to see them at least recognize agriculture as the primary, most vital industry in the United States and the world. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O. Thank you much there, Orion Samuelson. And I was just checking tweets. Some of the folks who are out caring for animals this morning are tweeting the experience. What's his Valley Farm Boy, I think, saying, I am betting I don't meet too many animal activists while I'm caring for my animals this morning. I can imagine, yeah. Oh, by the way, I do tweet and retweet and favorite tweets, whatever. But every now and then, especially between broadcasts, I come across things of interest. If you care to follow me there on Twitter, Max Armstrong, simple enough, right? And we throw in a few statistics every now and then and some interesting facts and some fun links to just kind of keep you abreast of what's going on. I mentioned being at Louisville at the Farm Show, talking with the farm equipment folks, in addition to visiting with Jim Walker, another one on the panel with me, the panel that I moderated there for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. was a gentleman who is with the folks at Kubota. And Todd Stuckey is Vice President of Sales, Senior Vice President of Sales with Kubota. Of course, they very much are in the tractor business. He oversees marketing and sales and product support for Kubota, but they have a little bit different angle than the folks at Case IH because there's a little more of a consumer market in the tractors they sell.
Kubota, we cover a lot of different markets. We go from the residential to the commercial and into the farm. But coming back to, you know, what we see the trough here and on the farm side is, you know, we're still going to plant acres, we're still going to harvest acres, and we're still going to feed our cows and calves. So I think the usage of the equipment's going to be there, and there's still demand. Not everybody bought new equipment, and they'll need to buy some new stuff to going forward. So we kind of see it in our industry that, yeah, we have some headwinds, but, you know, 2016-17, we should be coming out of it.
Has part of the problem been that it's been such a tough comparison? I mean, we had such a robust period, so that any kind of weakness is going to look pretty tough.
Yeah, you're exactly right. When you come off of some record-breaking year after year after year, it is hard. But for Kubota, the analogy is we went through the recession in 2008 and 9, and we've seen our industry, you know, cut in half. And it took 2 to 3 years to work your way out of it. But for the last 6 years, we've been climbing out of it in our segment. And I think the farm side of the business is going to see the same thing.
One thing I see you folks doing in your company is you're actually increasing horsepower in your tractors. That speaks volumes about your confidence in this key production agriculture sector to recover.
It sure does, Max. We're expanding. I mean, we have the smaller horsepower products, and for us to grow, we need to grow into larger tractors. So we put a new factory in France. We're building our 170 horsepower tractor, and we're just going to start shipping those to dealers this year. And we will enter into that row crop segment, and we're excited to get into it. Our dealers are very excited. And, you know, it's probably not the best time to go into it, but, you know, we're going to come out of this, and I think the years to come for our industry is going to be very positive.
Is that the M7 series that's coming along?
Yes, it is. It's our M171, but it is the M7 series.
I know you've had it at the farm shows. Producers have been around there. They seem to be showing good interest.
Yeah, they're showing good interest. We've put a lot of testing in. We put a lot of time in developing the tractor. So at Kubota, we're very excited. The first customers that had them are very excited. So we're ready. We're getting ready for the mass rollout to get them out to our dealers and get them in the hands of our customers.
That's Todd Stuckey. He's with Kubota as we visited there at the National Farm Machinery Show this week. We also talked while there about the huge merger announced a few days ago that will tie up the big chemical company based in China with the big one based in Switzerland that is also a very large player in the agrochemical market in the United States. We'll share that visit coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN. The Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio, 12 minutes before 6. There was that big news a few days ago that ChemChina, the huge agrochemical conglomerate, well, much more than agrochemical, actually big in many other areas, too. State-owned chemical company in China would be buying Swiss-owned Syngenta, which, of course, is a major player in the North American agrochemical market. Are we putting this in the hands of too few companies? That's what some farmers are wondering. Farmers were talking about it, to be sure, at the National Farm Machinery Show. I visited with Paul Meinhardt, head of corporate communications, North America for Syngenta.
I mean, the feedback we're getting is very, very positive. I think that people, once they realize that what this means is that Syngenta stays Syngenta, then people think that this is a great deal. I mean, they realize the impact that that we will remain a supplier to them. It provides choice, and we'll continue with our great products, innovation, and R&D development. So everybody's, I think, pretty comfortable with us now. And at first, it's something where people say, there's some questions. But when they get that, when they understand that we will remain Syngenta, then people are comfortable.
What does it do, if anything, to further improve what you do in terms of research or product offerings or service to the growers?
Well, I mean, because we get to stay Syngenta, we continue to do what we've been doing. I mean, we invest over $1 billion a year in R&D. We've got some great products. We've had some great product launches, Acuron and others in 2015. We'll continue that in 2016 and on. So, you know, we get to continue to focus on what we do best, and that's delivering for our customers and innovating for the future.
The timetable is to have this done by later on this year?
That's what we believe. I mean, there's two steps that have to happen. Shareholders have to approve this, and then government regulators have to do their review. And so that'll take some number of months, and we believe that it should be completed by the end of this year.
Paul, the regulatory process in terms of approval by the federal agency, is it complicated at all by the fact there have been so many Chinese corporate acquisitions here in the early days of 2016?
I don't know that it's been complicated, but, I mean, there is a process that we'll have to go through. We're doing that voluntarily, and we're looking forward to it. So we're just going to go through the process.
What are some of the things that they look at before they approve such a merger? Market share, I guess, is one, is it not?
Right, exactly. So there's from an antitrust standpoint, they would be looking at whether this is good for customers in this case. And so, again, since we're not, since our businesses are complementary and we're not merging two organizations that have a lot of the same kind of businesses, I think we're pretty comfortable that is a process that we should be able to go through very well. So, again, we got to respect the process, and we will do that, but don't see any huge roadblocks in that area.
Tell us, who is ChemChina? Tell us a little bit about them, what they already do in the global marketplace.
Sure. They are a global company. They're based in China. They've been in business or started as they are now, I think, in 1984. They have close to $48 billion in annual revenues, well over 100,000 employees. They have a number of businesses that they acquired. And one of the things about them, when they acquire a business, they tend to leave it as it is and let it continue to do the work that it's been doing. They have a track record of that. That gives us a lot of encouragement that the same will happen with us. And there's some safeguards in place in this deal to ensure that happens. So, you know, again, we're excited about it because it gives us some additional investment. We think that they have seen the value that Syngenta has provided with the offer that they've made. And, we're just looking forward to continuing to be Syngenta.
Paul, does ChemChina have a research history? Are they progressive, or will Syngenta sort of be leading the way here, added to their portfolio to be somewhat of a research leader for them?
Well, I mean, certainly in agriculture, we will be a research leader for them. But in the other companies that they have, they do have research capabilities. They have facilities around the world. And so I think research and innovation in the future is one of the things that ChemChina looks for. And I think we will certainly be able to be additive to that goal in the agriculture area.
What do you say to someone who blanches at any kind of Chinese investment in the world, knowing that it is such a major customer for the United States? Is this helpful to the U.S. grower?
I think so. Look, any time that a company like ours can continue to invest in new innovative products, and that's what we have to do to keep ahead of the challenges that are facing farmers, then anything to do that, to help that, is a good thing. I talked to a farmer yesterday, too, who said, I asked the same question, how do you feel about this? And he said, I've been selling my corn and my soybeans to China for many years, so what's the difference? I think this is fine for me. And that's the kind of sentiment that I'm hearing from our channel partners as well as farmers.
Paul Meinhard, Director of Communications for Syngenta, talking about their planned merger with ChemChina, subject to approval of, shareholders and also the regulators as well. Willie Vogt writes about technology. He's always at shows like the National Farm Machinery Show and certainly the Farm Progress Show. He's with Penton Agriculture. Ask Willie for a quick reaction to what he was seeing at that big farm show in Louisville this week.
Part of what I'm hearing is that a lot of the growers, I think, may be here to look at what new ideas they've got. I don't know if they're ready to buy new equipment right now. I mean, that's just kind of the market we're in, and even the large and wholesale whole goods equipment makers know that. But I think you're looking at, I've got a piece of equipment. How could I make it better? What could I add to that piece of equipment? And then the other thing is, what am I doing on data capture? What can I do there? How can I enhance what I do? Because I know I'm eventually going to need that information.
So clearly some have come here in mind, thinking about what they're going to buy. I mean, they are going to make some purchases, some of these growers.
I think in any business, you've got to keep looking at the way you keep improving what you're trying to do. So I'm looking at those growers that are serious about the long-term fortune of their operation. Some growers may be looking at other avenues, but I think that here at any show like this where you can come in 1 or 2 days and catch up on everything, you need to make that investment.
Is it not the case that there are producers who look at these downturns as a real opportunity, that there are some things they can take advantage of when the ag economy overall is slow?
This is a magic time for a person who may have a little cash in the bank and the opportunity. I think that operations are going to become available. There's great pricing in the used equipment market. If you want to do some upgrading to late model used, there's an opportunity. But in terms of new equipment, the same things out there. There's some good opportunities there from a finance standpoint. Yeah, if you have it, it's a good opportunity to do some things.
Interesting point there, made by Willie Vogt, technical writer, equipment writer, editor with Penton Agriculture. Here's an interesting story. You know, I've just had the feeling when this wave started, I just had the feeling that there was a train wreck waiting out there. This backyard flock craze. You know, you had cities like Madison, Wisconsin saying, yeah, it's all right. Put a few chickens out there. Grow your own eggs. Produce your eggs and be close to nature. You, too, can be a farmer with a flock. The number of chickens abandoned at animal shelters by these so-called urban farmers is growing at an alarming rate. Although some folks were initially thrilled with the idea of raising their own chickens, a large number of people quickly became disillusioned. The amount of upkeep required? Why, this stuff's work. To keep the animals healthy and happy was apparently too much for many of these folks to handle. As a result, a large number of backyard chickens are being abandoned at animal shelters by urban farmers who don't want to keep up with their end of the bargain. Instead of learning to care for the animals, many of these fair-weather owners have decided to, quote, kick the chickens to the curb. A spokesman for the Humane Society, Paul Shapiro, told NBC News that hundreds of chickens are dropped off at shelters every year. Sometimes people will drop off around a dozen at a time. Unfortunately, the number is only getting bigger as more, quote, hipster farmers decide to abandon their plans. Shapiro said many areas with legitimized hen keeping are experiencing more and more of these birds coming in when they are no longer wanted. You get some chicks and they're very cute, but it's not as though you can throw them out in the yard and not care for them. That's the phrase that pays for the day, right? All right. Yeah, you just knew this was going to happen. I mean, for years we've been warned, don't give kids baby chicks at Easter. And here these people who had no experience whatsoever were sticking a few out there in the backyard or under the porch or wherever. And, of course, it became a train wreck. All right, we'll check in with the news with Veronica coming up here on WGN Radio. Yeah, Big O mentioned the book. We'll be signing about it at the Sublette Farm Toy Show next month on the 20th of March, Sublette, Illinois. Max Armstrong here thanking you for being with us on the Saturday morning show right here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.